I pushed it up. Okay. Well, first of all, I'd like to say thank you for having me back tonight. Apologize for having to be here alone, but that's one of the things that we miss about Africa is the ability or the time that we had together as a family. Once we got back here in the States, all the kids started going their own directions. I have kids in two different churches tonight, and my wife is homesick, and one's still doing homework, so she couldn't come with me either. But so I said, well, be on my own tonight, guys. So, but anyway, first I want to share some slides with you guys. Hopefully we'll be able to see them. If you want to go ahead and go to that next one, well, let's get the lights down first. I'll try not to overrun like I did last time too, so keep you guys here too late. This is our first day in Africa. We arrived in the capital of Ghana, Accra, Ghana. The Southern Baptist, no, yeah, this is a Southern Baptist guest house right there in Accra, Ghana. That's where, this is Southern Baptist Church, right? Yeah. So, it's part of your ministry. They let us stay there, not for free, but they let us stay there. It's a really nice place. A little blue car is just loaded down with luggage. We had 17 suitcases, and they're crammed into that little car. And there's seven of us in the car as well, or six of us. So, yeah, it was a long ride back from there to where we were staying. Go ahead and advance the slide. This is just a picture of those. We're driving through the capital, right down in the capital of Accra on this busy city street. I saw a guy walking his herd of sheep by, and I saw some cows too. And I like this one because it's got electrical poles for sale in the front, right there in the foreground. Go ahead and go to the next one. This is the house that we stayed in Ho. We were where we stayed for most of the time we were in Ghana. Well, all the time we were in Ghana, we lived in this little house here, a three-bedroom house with a missionary family we shared with for 2.5 months, and there was 13 of us living in that house for 2.5 months, which was yeah, stressful. Go ahead. This is our Kroger's, and you can see fish up here on the side. That's our fish market, and I'm not sure. Looks like there's some herbs and stuff on the other side over there. Some stuff. Go ahead and forward it up. This was just another shot of the market. You can go ahead and slide through that. I can't really see what's in it. This is where we got our rice. And every time you buy rice, you have to sift it to get the bugs and the rocks and everything else out before you can cook it. And so that's why I say bugs. So this is the meat market. You can see the three gentlemen there. And this is not refrigerated. And you can't see the flies, but there are flies all over the place in here. This is where you would buy your meat. But the missionaries, thankfully, that we were staying with decided to drive 2 hours into Accra to buy their meat so they can get it out of a refrigerator instead of out of this shit, this guy's building. It's one of the neighbors where we were staying. Many of the people in there don't have electricity, so she would come over to their house and plug her cell phone in, charge it up all the time. So she'd sit around and talk on her phone to her friends while it was charging. So neighborhood kids come to into the front yard. This is in the front yard of the house we stayed in. They played soccer there every day. The first week we were there, they killed a black mamba in our front yard. Yeah, the first week, that was a real nice welcome for us. Go ahead. Same first week, our neighbors, one lot, empty lot next to us, in their house, they decided to mow their grass. They don't use lawnmowers, they use fire. And I don't know if it got out of control or not, but you can go ahead and slide it. This is the lady, she's really grinning, she's having a good time. And her husband's the next picture.
Really nice people. I thought their house was going to burn down.
But sorry, you can't see them. A little too dark because these were not taken at night. Our first day our first Sunday in Ghana, we had to drive to the village of Jokpo, and there's a little bridge that the kids are walking across,
and it's just made out of planks of wood, and it was starting to cave in. And the missionary lady that we were staying with, she had to drive us there, and she's afraid to drive across it. So they all got out and walked across it. She told me to drive across.
So, now you can see me coming across it.
It held the car fine, no problem.
So we made it to church. That's the little church in Jokpo Village that we went to quite a few Sundays. And Chad, the missionary we were staying with, would preach while we were there. And you can go ahead and forward it. When we first got there, this was the Sunday school class for the kids. There's about 10 kids in there. Go ahead and forward it. By the end of the service, I came back out, and there was about 30 kids in there. You can't see all of them in this shot, but they'd come just slowly, gradually over the time that we were there. Go ahead and forward. This is the same church. This gentleman's reading the Bible. He's one of the
not a chief. They call him Togbays there. I'm not sure exactly what that means. It's an honorary name for an elderly person or for an elderly man. But you can't really tell from his Bible, but you can see he's got it all marked up, but
it's written in Ewe. That's their language, which was what I was impressed with.
But the language, it was actually written in his language. And this is a mountain, Mount Ataklu, that is it's like a freestanding mountain. It's about 15, 20 miles from where we were staying. You can see it from our backyard. But this is during Harmattan, and you can just barely make out the form of the mountain, which is a really, really big mountain. But you can just barely see it. And
there were days when the Harmattan, which was the sand blowing from the Sahara Desert, was so thick you couldn't even see that mountain. On a clear, clear day, which was very rare, this thing was huge.
So you can go ahead and forward it. I'm trying to give you an idea what Harmattan looks like. Here's some of the kids just walking home from school one day. I thought that was a cute set of those kids, so I took a photo. Go ahead and forward. Back in the village, I love these pictures of people carrying stuff on their heads. I've ever since I was a kid, seeing pictures of men and women carrying stuff on their heads has always impressed me. And go ahead, forward it up. They do a lot of that there. This is where we bought clothes. Where we bought material to make clothes out of this place. And then you could buy material really cheaply there and take it in to one of the seamstresses there. And for $5, they'd make you a dress. You know, so it was really inexpensive. So the girls got some clothes made. And this picture on this side, you see Martin. He was one of our guards. And on that side, that's his brother, who's a carpenter. And in the background, you see a little building. It's about as wide as the screen here. That's Martin's house that they built for Martin. And so that, to them, is a house. It's going to have a dirt floor, one room. We were hoping to put some electricity in it before we left, but that didn't work out. So if we get to go back, hopefully we'll get to. Okay, here's just a bunch of kids. We'll just kind of scroll through these. They love getting their picture taken. And so they just, anytime I come out with a camera or anybody come out with a camera, they were ready to pose, every one of them. So I got lots of great pictures of the kids. They're all beautiful kids, have beautiful smiles, beautiful eyes. The way you can tell the boys from the girls, as you see, they all have really short hair, is the girls will have a little earring in. And that's how you can tell the boys from the girls. Here's one where my daughter was showing them. She's showing the picture of the kids that they took. They always wanted to see the picture when we were done. You know, they wanted to see themselves on the camera. So that was a chore sometimes to do. This is my middle daughter, Morgan, and she's got a monkey. You can't really see the monkey, but she's enthralled with monkeys since she was a baby, and she got to hold a real monkey for the first time, and she was in heaven. So this is actually the first work I got to do. My tools didn't arrive when we arrived. It took them a while to get them because you guys had a big snowstorm here, and the snowstorm kept my tools from getting to me. So I was out without tools for a while, but this is one of the missionary homes, and they had got evicted from the home they were living in because the lady's father died, and she inherited the house, and she didn't want him in it, so she evicted them. They moved into this little bitty missionary home that they used on it's a church house that was supposed to be for, like, when they had visitors come. Well, they had to move into it, so they added an addition. They were adding an addition on, and I got to help run the wiring and stuff. Or you can go ahead and see. Or forward it. This is that's Dave Matt.
His name is Matthews. I've
drawn a blank on his first name at the moment. But this is his house. These are the Africans that are going to build it. You can go ahead and forward. That's the little taxi that my friend Jerry would drive me around in. And let me tell you, that was a bucket of bolts. And I was afraid it was going to fall apart all the time. But it didn't ever fall apart on me. But I thought it was going to. Go ahead and go forward. You can see in some of these pictures, not necessarily this one, but they do everything by hand. Forward to the next one. Jerry's mixing some concrete. Right there, they don't have concrete mixers. They do everything by hand. They carry it over in buckets. They pour. This is a little footer for the wall. It's going to build up on here, but go ahead and forward. They chisel out any concrete that needs chiseled out later. They don't have jackhammers or hammer drills. It's all hammer and chisel. They do have PVC glue and PVC, but it's not like ours here. And here we are. I'm on another mountain in Ho. It's called Ho Mountain, looking out over the part of the city of Ho, and that's Mount Ataklu in the distance. You can kind of get a better sense of Harmattan and also get a better sense of how big that mountain really is. Go ahead and forward it. We did climb that mountain one Saturday. That's a Tro-Tro. You can't really see it in this picture very well, but it's just loaded down with stuff. They were everywhere. They often had people hanging on top of them, people hanging off the sides of them, and you wondered how some of them stayed up. But they loaded them down. Wednesday afternoon, we went into the village of, which village was this? Not Jokpo, it's Kojibi. Kojibi was the village closest to us, and we went in every Wednesday, and they had game time with the kids every Wednesday afternoon, and Here they are playing a game of tug of war, but they tie their rope in a circle and pull all different directions. So I'm not really sure how they determine who the winner is. And here's some of the kids. I got inside the circle and took some pictures of the kids. They also play a game where they jump up and down and clap their hands. This is a game the girls play, and they kick their feet. It's kind of like rock, paper, scissors, something like that, but they do it with their whole body. I never could figure it out. And they're trying to teach my daughters. You can go ahead. They're still trying to teach them. Again, I'm just enthralled with the people carrying stuff on their heads, so I love taking pictures of that. You'll see some more of them, I'm sure, before we're done. Go ahead. Here we are. What was it, day 8 when we first started? I showed you that first picture. Now we're day 22. They got the building framed up, and we're getting ready now actually to put the electric in the walls, and that means chiseling a groove down the wall and putting a conduit in, and then putting concrete over top of the conduit. So a lot of work there to do work. This is a hole they dug by hand while I was there. Go ahead and forward to the next slide, and you can see how big it is now. This guy's
6 foot tall, probably. He's standing down that hole, and it's 4 foot taller than he is. At least they dug all that by hand.
This lady was funny. We were in the market one day.
I'd been told, I'd been warned, if you take pictures of people, they might ask you for money.
And so she was
pounding fufu, which was the staple that we ate there. It was like a dough. It was raw, and you just rip it off, and then you dip it in this sauce, and you just swallow it. You didn't chew it, and I didn't really like it, but I ate it some. But she was pounding fufu to make the powder to make the dough. It's hard work, but I stopped and took her picture of her pounding, and when I started to walk away, she said, no, you pay me. And so I didn't have much money with me, so I pulled out a little bit of change and handed it to her, and she started laughing and just got the biggest kick. I didn't have hardly any, I paid her very little. And she said to all of her friends in the market how much I paid her for taking her picture, and they all started laughing. And I was like, okay, thank you, and I walked away, and they got a great kick out of me paying them so little. But
she was a cute lady. This is a picture of Sunday school class. This is Matt Zimmerman, one of the missionaries there that we met while we were there. And almost every service, every Sunday school, every church service that we went to had something to do with adultery or fornication. And it's pretty rampant there amongst the villagers. They don't
believe it's wrong for a married man to have mistresses. You know, it's kind of been a belief of the way the African culture is, that a man doesn't have to be married to one woman. He can be married and have many girlfriends. And so as they get saved, you know, they're trying to teach them that this is against what God says in the Bible. But just about every class they talk about this.
And it's amazing how open this is. In church Sunday morning service, it's pretty full. You can tell the churches are usually pretty full. But it's amazing how open the African people are to talk about it, you know, stuff that we would never say in public. It's everybody knows their business there. There's no privacy. Also, many of the businesses you see, and I took many, many pictures, but I'm only going to show you a couple, have some relation. This one says Amen Enterprises. Go ahead and flip the next one. What did I leave up here? My Redeemer Lives Hair Clinic. I don't know if there's, what's the next one? Yeah, oh, that's just a bad electrical job. They
use the word God or Jesus or My Redeemer or whatever in almost all of their sayings, all of the names of their businesses, even though they don't really go to church or, you know, they believe in God and they believe He's real, and they think that if they use His name in the name of their business, He's going to bless their business, to show you how little they know of God.
This was a parade we were invited to, a celebration between the local villages, celebrating unity. I'm taking pictures of that. Go ahead. This guy was playing a conch shell, I don't know how you pronounce that word, as he marched through the band. Then go ahead. And this is a typical drum, the way they play drums there. They don't use straight drumsticks. They use those little hook things. Go ahead to the next one. This kid, you can't see the sweat on his face, but it's just pouring down his face. He's playing his heart out, and don't even have buttons on top of his little pegs he has to push down. Go ahead, what's the next one? This is typical how they carry their young ones when they're really little. It's on their backs, and when we got to Togo, I was impressed because
they would ride their motorcycles with their baby strapped on their backs like that, and carrying stuff on their heads and the baby on their back.
It was just amazing how how well they could do it. This is Aisha down here in the far corner on the bottom right-hand side. We nicknamed her 50-50 because when we met her, she said she's 50% Christian and 50% Muslim. And so we got to talking with her and was trying to explain to her that you can't be both. And these three gentlemen on the left here were pastors from America that came. They're with the Fundamental Baptist Fellowship Association. That's what it stands for, Fundamental Baptist Fellowship Association. It's a group of churches in the U.S. here. And they came from that organization, and they come here every year. And they got to meet Aisha while they were there, and they were actually at this particular moment leading her to the Lord. And so we told her after that that she's no longer 50-50, and she's 100% Christian. And then you can't see, but over on the right, Marnie is the missionary friend of ours that we were staying with. She's been mentoring this young lady since that night. But it was pretty neat to see her get saved. Well, there's Marnie. You can see her sitting next to her now. This is January Zimmerman. She's from Washington Courthouse, and I met her in Ghana. But they have another ministry on Sunday afternoons. They reach out to the kids in this different part of Ho, and so they're out playing games. You can go ahead and go to the next one. Just another picture of some of the young men from the villages that come with them and help them out, helping the kids play games. This lady decided to take a break from whatever work she was supposed to be doing to watch the kids play. It's out her back door of her house. And here are the kids in one of the games. They were supposed to run up to this cone and run around it, but most of them decided to come up and run circles around me instead. But this little girl got it right. She ran around the cone. Go ahead and go to the next one. This was a little room that they had that they did this ministry. And after they played games, they brought all these kids into this little room. It was about a 10 by 15 size room, and they had 75 kids in this room. It was crowded and it was hot, and they did it every day. I always love these trees. I call them the Dr. Seuss tree. This looks like something right out of Dr. Seuss. You can go ahead. I just love that tree, so I wanted to show it to you. My oldest daughter, Taylor, and this little girl's name is Happy. I thought I took that one out. Well, this is John. He was one of the guards at the house we stayed in Ghana. Go ahead. And this next picture is Martin in the back with my three daughters. He's one of our guards. Here's our first day in Togo. We came over on Easter weekend, and everywhere we went, we saw these church groups out doing prayers and singing and stuff right in the road, and they'd stop right in the road, block the whole road, and you'd have to stop and wait till they were done before we could go further. But these guys were really doing it. This guy's praying Christ. These other guys with the helmets were the guards, and they had something that they were beating him with as they walked down the road, and they got a rope tied to him and everything. I mean, they were doing a really good display. You're all Catholic from the Catholic churches in the area. Go ahead and scroll on. This is Palame, the town we stayed in Togo. If we went back to Togo, this is where we'd want to live. Palame was just we just loved it there. Unfortunately, we don't speak French, and they do, and we had a real hard time communicating, but go ahead. But we made it. Our first Sunday in Togo, we were trying to go up the mountain to this church we were going to be visiting, and this big old semi is coming down, and there's not room for two cars to pass here. So everybody had to back up down the mountain to get it to a spot wide enough where the truck could safely pass us and we could keep going. Go ahead. This is the church on the mountaintop that we were trying to get to. And once we parked, we still had to walk. Go ahead. And you'll see next is inside the church. It's all made out of sugar cane poles or some kind of cane and a tin roof. Go ahead. Scroll up. This is outside. They had a Sunday school class for the kids. They had to go outside because they didn't have any place else to do it. But luckily there, it's sunny and hot every day. Go ahead. This is the music department. That's what every church we went to, this is what they had for music. It's just these little gourds with beads on the outside of them, and they sang beautiful. Go forward. This was Easter Sunday, and they had all the kids in the church come up, and they asked my daughters to come up as well, and my youngest, or my middle daughter, way on the end there, but all these kids were quoting scriptures that they had memorized that day. And every time they quoted a scripture, they got a piece of candy. Go ahead. What's the next one? Oh, I know what this one is. I couldn't resist this one. I just took a picture of their feet and saw my daughter stand there barefoot. This is the road that we traveled on a lot. And let me tell you, the roads were rough there. This is probably the smoothest of all the roads we traveled on, but it was still terrible, terrible rough. Go ahead. So they were widening the road. The government was. And you can see on the side, that these are houses that used to be on the side of the road that government decided they'd built their houses too close to the road, and since they wanted to widen it, they just come in and bulldozed the front of the houses off and left the people people's houses half standing and said, "You're out of luck." So we live in a good country. This is Al Donald's. This is in the capital of Togo, Lomé. The guy must have been somewhere and seen a McDonald's, and he opened up his own restaurant. So go ahead. We never ate there, but they say it's really good. These are some countertops I was building for a missionary family in Palomé, where we were living for a while. And so this is the first part of it. You'll see the finished product in a minute. And then I was also changing some plumbing fixtures for them. I was trying to get this house ready for them to move in. Go ahead. My daughter took this. This is the finished product of the countertops. We were reattaching the new countertops on. We had to build them from scratch. You can't just go to Lowe's and buy countertops. We had to make them all from scratch. So it's a bug eat bug world. And I took this picture of this bug, and he flew away, and I was disappointed. But he came right back and landed. And when he came back, he had this bug in his hand, or in his claws, whatever he's got, and he was eating him. So I thought that was cool. This is at the blind center where we lived in Togo. We was at the blind center, and these are blind students on a slip and slide, and that was pretty interesting. But I got a couple more pictures of this. I think you can go ahead. And I was the one that got to spray them all down, and they were spraying soap on them. And all the kids, they just had a whole lot of fun with that. It was a lot of fun. This was probably about our last day in Palomé. Now we're up in Chico at the hospital compound where we were hoping to be at. We were here for the last 2 weeks of our trip. A lot of things happened. We didn't get there like we planned. God had whole other things for us to do. But the kids couldn't get enough of white people. That one little girl was touching my daughter's hair. They wanted to touch our skin, touch our hair. They'd never seen something like it. So that girl's touching her hair. This is the girl. I just love it. She's carrying a Bible on her head. I love that picture. Go ahead. And you can keep scrolling through. These is just a couple pictures of the kids with my kids playing. Here's another lady carrying her fruit to the market. Go ahead. Typical what their houses look like
out in the bush. This is actually probably a more expensive home than most of the homes you would see,
because it's actually a stone wall. It's not the thatch walls that you see a lot of. Go ahead. Another family carrying their fruit to market. Somebody had a pet snake, and they let the snake loose for me to take pictures of. So it's on. We saw lots of snake boy there. While I was in Palomé, what I ended up doing, which we had no intention of me being a part of until we got there, I didn't know this was even a possibility. They were building this church in the village of Agu, and they asked me to oversee the building construction of the project. So that's where I spent most of my time in Togo, was overseeing the construction of this building. So I have two or three pictures of it here. And I think I got one more of the roof. We just put this roof on, I think, when I took these pictures. And then I think the last pictures of my family, who couldn't be here with us tonight. But that's all the pictures I brought tonight. But when we got there, you know, we had one thing in mind that we thought we were going to be doing. As soon as we got there, we realized God had a whole other thing in mind. I figured my tools would beat me there, but my tools didn't arrive for several weeks after we got there, which held me up from being able to do a whole lot of work. But then I got to end up helping out with the construction of that addition to that home on the missionary home, which needed my attention. I did eventually get to work on the Bible college that we planned on rewiring, but they ran out of money and was only able to buy enough materials to do half of it. They underestimated the cost of the materials and only had enough money to buy half of the materials. So we rewired half of it, and I mentioned Jerry in there. He's a local electrician, pretty darn good electrician. Don't think he would quite make it here with our codes, but for what they do over there, he's really good. And I trained him to finish the other half once they raise the money to do it, and I think he'll do a fine job. Actually, the day we were leaving to come home, we found out they had finally raised enough money to purchase the material for the second half of the project. So I don't know if he's got it done yet or not. I haven't heard. I need to actually contact him and see. So you know, we thought we'd go there and I'd spend every day over there at this Bible college, but God had other plans. One of the things that we really learned was, don't make any plans when God's in control, because whatever plans we make probably aren't going to matter. So, I mean, I don't mean to don't make any plans, but, you know, don't go without no plan, but have some plan, but be flexible and be prepared for whatever God throws at you. In Togo, we planned on being at the hospital compound the whole time we were there, but because somebody's plumbing lines busted in the house that they were living in. They had to take our house, the hospital compound, and so we had to stay in Palome, which we hadn't wanted to do or planned to do, but that was our favorite part of the time there. So we were really glad in the end that that's where we ended up staying most of the time. We love Palome. We love the Blind Center. It was just great, great time to be with the blind students there and the people that were running the place. It was a blessing to be there. One of the things that we miss about Africa the most was how much closer we were as a family, because you're not torn by all the things that there are to do. You know, you have nothing to do there really, so you stay together as a family and you just enjoy each other's company. And did a lot of reading, but coming back from Africa, you know, I had gone over there hoping for some huge revelation from the Lord saying, this is exactly what I want you to do, Gary. I'm an electrician here, but I don't enjoy doing it here. And so I thought, okay, I'll go to Africa and I'll fall in love with it again, like I used to be when I first started out as an electrical contractor. But I got to Africa and, you know, I didn't love it any more there than I do here. And I can say that I don't think that that's what I would want to spend the rest of my life doing if I had any say in it. But if that's what God wants me to do, that's what I'll do. But I came back from Africa and I told God, I said, okay, God, I don't think, I said, I know I can't be a pastor and I don't have a degree, I don't have a Bible degree. I don't really think I can spend the rest of my life over there doing that kind of work. You know, there's one thing I have a passion for, and that's photography. I've worked my tail off trying to find a way to get into the ministry as a photographer, and God's just kept all those doors closed. So I said, okay, God, I said, maybe I'm wrong about your call for me as a missionary. I'm going to go back home to the job that I really don't enjoy, but I'm just going to try to make the best of it and try to find the joy that I used to have. And I get home, and 2 weeks later, they called me and said, you know what? We're laying you off. You know, we're closing LMI. Not totally folded, but they pretty much closed down, and they're just LMI now on paper. Legacy Ministries is just Legacy Ministries on paper. Most of the people that were working for LMI took the same thing that I did. They didn't have a choice. A few of the guys got lucky and got kept on as Dayton Christian employees or Xenia Christian employees, but most everybody was let go. And so I said, okay, God, what are you trying to tell me here? I said, I just made this agreement with you on the plane back from Africa that I was going to come back and I was going to work this job. And I said, now I don't have that job. So it took me probably 4 months to really process through everything that happened on the trip, everything that happened prior to the trip, getting us there, and everything that happened since I came home. And I sat back and I started praying about it. And I said, God, okay, what is it that you want me to do? Because I hadn't been able to find a job in 4 months either on top of that. And so I just started praying about it, and I said, okay, God, I said, I'm willing to do whatever it is that you want me to do. I just need you to help me to figure that out. And so I said, okay, I'm going to apply, or I'm not going to apply, but I'm going to send information out to some different ministries and see if they have any interest in a person with my abilities. The deal with ABWE I thought was pretty much a dead end, so I didn't think that was going to be for us after being in Africa. So I contacted Wycliffe and several different ministries, EBM, which is Evangelical Baptist Missions, African Inland Missions, World Team, Christian Missionary Alliance, the Southern Baptist. I've contacted them, but we don't qualify for them because we have teenage kids. They won't consider anybody with teenage kids. Anyway, I sent all of these mission agencies information about who I am, about how I felt called to be a missionary, about what my skills were, about the fact that I don't have a Bible degree. And I said, okay, God, if there's a place for me out there, then let me know what it is. Wycliffe Ministries has another organization called JARS, which is their aviation ministry. And I'd gotten onto their website somehow, and I saw all these job openings that they have, well, missionary positions they have, not really job openings, all over the world. And I started looking at them, and there's all these places for a maintenance person, an electrician, and all that. So I said, every time I saw one that I felt like I was qualified for, I clicked on send me some more information. There was about 12 of them. The one all of them had something to do with maintenance or electrical or something that construction type things, but one that I clicked on, and that was one for a photojournalist. And I didn't really feel like I was qualified for that, but I thought I would like to at least have some more information. The next morning, I got a call from Wycliffe, and they said, we see that you've applied for or asked for some more information for our photojournalism position. And I said, well, yeah. And I said, along with a bunch of other things, and he goes, yeah, well, I only want to talk to you about this one. So I just felt like God was telling me that there is still a need for me somewhere. I don't know what it is yet, but I know there's a need for me. EBM has contacted me, expressed interest in us. The CMA has, World Team has, African Inland Mission has. I'm actually meeting with them tomorrow to discuss something, what they would consider, how they would consider using us on the mission field. All of these places are looking at us as career missionaries. Wycliffe is ready for us to apply for them, to them. One thing that I've been waiting for before I could go any further is to talk with my own church and get their feedback on our trip and explain to them what's going on and just make sure they're with us and they're behind us, you know, on this endeavor before I could really apply anywhere. And Saturday I got a phone call back from one of the elders, and he said, you know, after our meeting, he said, we all feel that you're ready for this and we think you should take the next step. So I don't know what the next step is really, but I'm applying for Wycliffe. Hopefully this week I'll fill out the application. We've got this meeting with African Inland Mission tomorrow, and Evangelical Baptist Missions was going to call me back once that they had talked with the elders, and I'm not sure what they want to speak to me about. World Team wants me to apply for them. They've sent me all the applications. They want me to apply with them. So I don't know which way God is really asking me to go with which ministry, but at this point, I've just decided I'm going to pursue each of them until God starts closing doors. So I guess what I'm saying here tonight really is the trip to Africa was wonderful. We had a wonderful time there. We learned a lot. We really learned a lot. My wife learned that she could live there, and she could live in Africa. She misses it. All our kids miss it. But we're still learning to trust God, and we're still learning to know how to understand what God, when God is talking to us. And so I just would pray, or just ask you guys to pray for us as we take these steps to see what it is that God's asking us to do, that we will be able to have a discernment, and God would be patient with us when we make mistakes and try to go through the wrong door. But hopefully I've learned from my past. One of the things that I've learned over the past 8 years is, over the period of the past 8 years, there's been points and times in my life where God has been saying, okay, Gary, this is what I want you to do. And it's been very clear to me that this is what God wants me to do. And so I would start down that path. And at some point down that path, I go this way and God goes this way, and I don't realize that God's going a different direction than I am. And I keep pushing down this direction. And then finally God says, okay, Gary, you're not listening to me, so I'm just going to quit talking. And this happened a number of times over the past 8 years. And until about 2 months ago, I had never really been able to figure that out. But 2 months ago, when I started praying about this and things started happening again, God opened a part of my brain up that I could look back over those 8 years and I could see every time that God started working with me and showing me this is the way I want you to go. At some point in time, I quit listening and got excited for what I wanted to do and started just going that direction. And God was over here trying to get me to go this direction. And it took me 8 years to see that I kept making the same mistake over and over and over and over. So hopefully I've learned my lesson. And with this time, Wycliffe, if I had to say I'm ready to go, I'd go with Wycliffe right now. But I don't want to make the same mistake I've been making. So I'm going to explore these other opportunities that God's presenting to me. And if Wycliffe isn't where God wants me, then I don't want to be with Wycliffe, because I don't want to get over. They're wanting to send us to Kenya, to Nairobi, Kenya. And I don't want to get over in Nairobi and 6 months later realize, oh, this is terrible, I can't do this, and have to come back home. So I want to pursue this, but I want to pursue it in God's time and in the way God wants it to be done. So just ask that you guys pray that I don't allow my heart to get in the way of God's desires and God's will for my life, which I've done in the past. So I'm not proud to say that that's what's happened, but I am human, and I'm not ashamed to admit my mistakes either. So, okay, well, that's pretty much what I wanted to say tonight. And I want to open up to questions. Does anybody have any questions about anything that happened in Africa? Yeah.
You mentioned guards a couple of times. Did you have to have guards at your home, and why?
We never really felt unsafe and felt like we needed them there. But here's what happens. If we didn't have a guard on duty because we were Americans or we were white, Caucasian people, the African people there know that the white people comes with things and money that they don't have. And so if we didn't have a guard on staff and somebody broke into the house and stole all of our stuff, the police would say, well, we're not doing anything because you didn't have a guard. So you basically have to hire a guard so that if something did happen, then the police would try to apprehend the person. But if you didn't have a guard on duty, they'd say it's your own fault. So it wasn't that we felt like we needed it for safety, but plus the house that we were living in, the missionaries that were staying there was another missionary's home, and those guards worked for the other missionaries, but they were home on furlough, so they had to keep the guards paid because it was part of the deal they made with the other missionaries. Now that our friends have moved to the village that they live in, they moved into the village of Kojibi. I'm not sure that they actually have guards anymore, but again, it wasn't a thing of we felt unsafe, but it was a thing that if something happened, the police would say it's your own fault. So they did it, but I think they don't have guards where they're living now. So. Anybody else have a question? I can think of 1,000 more things I could keep talking if you want me to, but I don't really want to keep you guys late. So I thought I'd just kind of keep it as short as possible and fill you in with where we were and what happened and what is happening with us currently. Yeah. Okay, well, Wycliffe is Wycliffe Bible Translators, and what they do is they go all over the world and they translate the Bible into different languages for people who's got languages that aren't necessarily written languages. And so they translate the Bible as best they can into their language. No, they don't do the unwritten languages because they wouldn't have a written language. So they just do the obscure languages where the Bible hasn't been translated yet, I guess. JARS is the aviation ministry of Wycliffe. Wycliffe also has another part of their ministry called SIL, and I honestly don't know what SIL stands for, but it's their teaching and schooling part of their ministry. And that's really what Wycliffe is known throughout the world by, is SIL, because they can't get into a lot of countries as Wycliffe Bible Translators because many countries wouldn't want them in their country. So they are known throughout the world mostly as SIL. Yeah, I'm pretty sure that the number they gave me was 6,000 missionaries as a part of Wycliffe. And they have, I know right now, 3,000 positions open for more missionaries. But it's a very, very large organization, and I would feel really good about being with a large organization because they, I'm sure, would know a whole lot more about what they're doing than some of these smaller ministries out there. But Wycliffe is a really, really good ministry. No, everything that I've asked them about is a career missionary where I would be self-supported, nothing's paid, I'd have to raise my own support. Now, I mentioned the CMA and I mentioned Southern Baptist Convention, we don't qualify for them, but if we qualified for one of those and we were attending one of their churches, we wouldn't have to raise our own support as a career missionary. But with all these other places, yeah, we'd have to go on deputation and raise our own support just like most every missionary does. So with Wycliffe, they want us to come in July for their training, and then in July we would be trained, we'd find out exactly where we're going to go. There's a possibility that they would send us to Australia as well. There's a couple of different places. Or there's a possibility we'll remain right here in the States as well. But anyway, we'd find out then in July where we would be going, and then in August we'd be on deputation. It'd be time to start raising our own support. Which isn't an exciting prospect, but you know, God's in control of that. We raised our own support to go to Africa this last time in 2 months. God provided almost $20,000 in 2 months. It was definitely all of God, and nothing other than me being the person saying, hey, I need the money. I did nothing to get it. you know, God brought it in. And I can only give him the honor and the glory for that. Anything else anybody want to know about?
When you were here earlier, I talked to your children, and they were very excited about going. They weren't disappointed or homesick or...
All of them were a little. I'm the only one that wasn't homesick. All of the girls and my wife were all a bit homesick. We were torn. We wanted to be there for 6 months. We only ended up being able to be there for 4.5 months for a couple of reasons. One, the money. We didn't quite raise the $20,000 we needed. And two, my son was back here in the States, and he wasn't doing really too well on his own. So we came home for him and for the fact that we were running out of money. But we were all torn when it came time to actually say, okay, it's time to go home. The girls were all ready to leave, but they all didn't want to leave. We all fell in love with Africa. It's weird. I don't know if everybody does this when you go to Africa, but you feel like you leave a part of yourself there, and you feel like you bring a part of Africa back with you at the same time. It gets into you. It gets into your blood real quick. It's just at least the part of Africa we were in. But there was homesickness. The hardest thing for anybody to get used to, again, I didn't have any problem with this, was the heat. My oldest daughter and I, we stepped off the airplane. It was 120 some degrees with about in Accra. The humidity was terrible. It was probably 40% or so humidity in Accra. But I felt good, except for I had long sleeve shirt and jeans on because I'd been in Europe where it was really cold. And we stepped off the plane and we was all dressed up for winter. But my youngest, Lindsay, it took her probably 2 months almost to really get acclimated to the climate there. It was hot every day. It was really hot every day. When we got into Ho and in Togo, the humidity wasn't nearly as bad as it was at the coast. But in Togo, there were many days it was 130 degrees. It was 120 just about every day. So we were there at the hottest time of the year, though. But I loved it. I hate this cold here. I wasn't ready to come back to the winter, that's for sure.
We don't like the winter either.
Yeah. I don't know why we live in Ohio. I can't figure it out. Yeah. Something like that. Anything else? Well, if not, I'll turn it over to Pastor Dan. I'll be here in the back, too, afterwards if anyone has anything they want to ask me about. I really appreciate you allowing me to come back and to share with you. And we had a great time, and you guys helped us be a part of that, and we appreciate that.